Hi, I'm Dale Shores.
And I'm Emerson Collins, and you're watching The Dale and Emerson Show.
Straight talk.
Real gay.
Do you think we could ever reverse that? I'd like to be real gay.
You'd like to be.
Yes, I know I'm not holding a chihuahua today, so, you know, maybe I'm a little less gay, but look, I created my set. I want you to see that I created a set for y'all. We'll get to that in a second.
Yes, well, it's for our very special guests. Joining us later will be Scott Lowell and Peter Page. You know them, you love them, an iconic mini Queer as Folk reunion, and I could not be more excited.
Yeah, me too. Old friends of mine, I love them.
You just called them old. That's rude.
Well, you know, old in the sense that, I mean, we go back a while. It's been a while since, you know, I just realized something. Queer as Folk and Sordid Lives both turned 20 at the same time.
It premiered the 20th anniversary of Queer as Folk is this December.
That's right. December 3rd, my birthday.
Oh, well, look at that.
So you're being a little more than delayed with me today. I'm like waiting for it's jumping a little bit. This internet,
feel like somehow we will get through it. Hello, everybody, and welcome. If you're watching us on Facebook or Periscope or YouTube, please share the broadcast with your friends. Start a little watch party. Let's welcome in some people so that by the time our guests arrive, when we're done with our nonsense, we got a big old audience for them. Oh, we've had a day, Del Shores.
Yeah, we've been just doing a lot of Instagram stories. I got up at 5:30 this morning and did my first one like at 6:10.
We are doing an Instagram takeover today for Deku because it's very exciting for us. Del's stand-up special, Naked Sordid Reality, that I directed, is streaming exclusively on Deku starting today.
Yes, and hot cover with that was a very fun cover shoot. I remember that day very, very well. I always say that's the kind of photo shoot you demand after a bad divorce.
Just, like what I want. For those of you who haven't seen the cover, you should go to Deku and check it out. But it's Del wrapped in various appendages of lithesome, handsome, naked men.
Yes, that's the naked part of the show.
Uh-huh.
So but that was a fun show to perform, and we did it like we did most of my taped ones at the Rose Room, live from the Rose Room. So I had a good time with that one.
It's a great, because you were in a mood for that show, you know.
I know. It was my bitter show. I was a little bitter. I was running on bitter. Just
a little,
yeah. But sometimes bitter, you know, bitter can fuel your creativity. Anger
Absolutely.
Can fuel your creativity. You
a
know,
a whole lot of art and nudes have come out of bitter.
That's right. I mean, let's not forget Jagged Little Pill sold 45 million copies. Yes. That was out of bitter and anger.
On the Broadway.
Yes.
Now.
So
and then.
It's also we wanted to tell everybody that besides the Deku news, Sordid Lives is now streaming 20 years later on two new services. One of them is called Canopy.com. I love this because it's spelled with a K. My mother would not like that. She did not like it when you misspelled things just for fun. Yeah, you're like Lorraine Shores. But it's Canopy.com. And if you have a library card, anywhere in the United States, I don't know why that cracks me up just a little bit. Do you have a library card?
I don't think I have a valid one anymore.
I don't have one anymore. I just have Amazon.com is my library. But anyway, if you have a library card, free. It is free with your library card. You can watch Sordid Lives and many, many other movies. And then there's another service called TubiTV.com. TubiTV.com. And it just launched there today, and it's their featured film today. So there we go.
Oh, that's very exciting. And also, I hope you all did your homework assignment this weekend and watched Circus of Books, because in a little while, we're going to have our first little group discussion. So prepare your thoughts, write your comments, and we'll have a little discussion in a little bit.
All right. Well, shall we get right to the news?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of live stream benefits going on. And one of the ones that really caught our attention was the GLAAD live stream. And it raised $250,000 for Centerlink for LGBTQ centers on Sunday night, hosted by Billy Eichner and Lily Singe. Is that the way you say Lily's
Sing.
Name? Sing. Okay. Okay. Billy interviewed Chasten about being a homeless teen and the cast of Jagged Little Pill, tying it right back to Alanis and her bitterness. Broadway performed Ty Oakley, Wilson Cruz interviewed local LGBTQ center director, and Jonathan Van Ness talked about breaking down the stigma living with HIV. Our queen, Melissa Etheridge, performed. Appearances by Matt, I can't even say his name. He's the perfect man for me. Matt Ballmer and Rosie and Adam Lambert and Dan Lacey, who I'm being obsessed with now because I'm binging. Schitt's Levy. Creek. What's that?
Dan Levy.
Oh, you put Ellie. Yes, of course. Hang on, I'm going to correct that on this thing.
Well, if you read it in advance, you'd know how to say these people's names.
Oh, no, I did read it. I did read it. But, you know, I'm not. It's here's the deal. Does anybody else notice this? When I'm trying to read these stories, I'm going from here to see Emerson and then here in the bifocal to see. So it's just age, Emerson. It's not a lack of, but you did mistype Levy. And an audio message from Barbara Streisand. So that this is the same organization, Centerlink, by the way, that we'll be talking to Scott and Peter about, that the Queers Folk cast is doing a big telethon for. So this is really exciting. LGBTQ centers also being hit very hard. So many organizations, theaters, name it, being hit by this pandemic.
And it's the one we did the story about last week, about all of the centers getting together and writing the government and saying, we need provisions specifically for us. And so while they wait for that, all these people are stepping up. I will say my favorite part of that broadcast, which I did not watch live, was that Barbara Streisand sent an audio message, not a video. So they played Barbara's message with her photo and then photos of LGBT centers. And I was like, I love that she did the least. Like,
it's a lot.
So it's appropriate.
It's hard to get camera ready. It's hard.
Well, you know, I'm sure it's just she wants to be able to control all the details. But, and the reason I didn't watch it is because Sunday night was the sophiest of choices for, you know, us musical theater gays, because it was also the live stream of Sondheim's 90th birthday. And I absolutely had to tune into that. It was 3 hours. They did have an hour long, almost technical delay, which just seemed right for theater people to struggle with. But then we got all of these deep cuts from Sondheim. Laura Benanti sang in her bathroom, which I appreciate because she knew the acoustics were great. Donna Murphy did Send in the Clowns with full like candles and flowers, like set for it. And then we got to the end and the really big guns. Patti LuPone sang Anyone Can Whistle from a different part of her house, not the basement where she's been providing us such entertainment lately. And then Bernadette Peters did No One Is Alone a cappella, and like the echo of like singing it by herself with no accompaniment, looking like it was 1983. But the big, big Kiki Camp triumph moment was Christine Baranski, Meryl Streep, and Audra McDonald doing the Ladies Who Lunch as a trio, giving us memes and gifts and full camp committed performance. No one can touch Elaine Stritch, but this came very, very close.
I just don't know how they get it all mixed and stuff. It's just that technical aspect of people being in their own homes doing this is very intriguing to me.
They play the tracks in headphones. That's why they all have in, you know, little earbuds and earpieces, so that then they're listening to the track, they record the vocal, and then somebody else mixes the two back together for the event.
Well, there you have it. Emerson knows everything. He knows so, so much.
Well, Scott Nevin's really good friend, Eric Bergen, that we know, produced the big Rosie event and managed that live stream. And he also did GLAAD's event the other night. He was on Madam Secretary. He's done a bunch of Broadway, but he's suddenly the go-to technical guy for like, we want to do a giant live stream event just because he figured it out the first time.
Yeah, I have a hard time with Zoom. Just with the gallery view and the, I'm just like so confused.
Look, y'all, us just figuring out StreamYard to do this broadcast was a big accomplishment. So we are thrilled you're all with us.
Look, me having to put my cue cards on the right side of my computer, you know, in the studio we had it, I liked it. It was like the old school where you had the, you know, your, maybe I should just do that with papers and throw them as I do them. That might be easier for me. I'm going to try this and I'm going to try not to mess this story up. It's the Catholic League.
Everybody hold your breath.
Don't hold your breath. Bill Donahue is the president of the Catholic League, an extreme conservative. He once blamed queer people for the Catholic Church abuse scandal and stated that LGBTQ parents shouldn't be allowed to adopt children because it's against God's nature. So his newest rant is because of the PRRI survey showing that 72% of respondents favored inclusion, non-discrimination, which that's a plus, y'all. That's a good plus of this story. Non-discrimination laws and that support for marriage equality was at its highest ever. Love that. Love that that progress is being made. But in a written piece for the Catholic League website, he argues that the LGBT community is a cultural phenomenon, not a biological one. Young people have been indoctrinated into thinking that being a member of the LGBT community is at least a value neutral attribute and maybe even cool. He says this is doing a disservice to young people and it shows up in high rates of depression and suicide in the segment of this population, which I don't understand if you're being cool, if you're suddenly suicidal. I don't understand. His logic doesn't add up to me. He argues further that the dominant culture as shaped by the schools, the media, the entertainment industry is driving the LGBT agenda and enticing adolescents to experiment. It is not devout Christian young people who are at war with human nature. It's secular minded kids who reject the idea of nature and nature's God. Southerners are more anchored in tradition and religion than any other part of the country. We knew that. While those on the West Coast are the most likely to see tradition and religion as constraining, thus leaving them more susceptible to experimentation. So yes, on the West Coast, we are going to experiment as to be expected Democrats, most of whom are liberals, he says, are most likely to be part of this LGBT community than Republicans. Well, yeah, that's kind of true because we want to be with people who, well, it's like, how do you embrace something that doesn't embrace you, right, Emerson?
Who said that?
I said that. Well, you said that.
I love that he basically said accidentally that Southerners are better bigots.
There's so much wrong with his logic. I mean, yes, it is true that there is much more suicide in LGBT youth, but I don't think it's because they think they're cool.
Yeah, well, it's irony. It's like the studies show the opposite of what he said. Of course, it's true that it's the fact that there's so much bigoted environment that LGBTQ teens and youth face significantly higher rates of depression and suicidal ideation and going all the way. So we all know that. And bless your bigoted heart, Bill Donahue.
You should have worn that shirt, Emerson, with that story. You should.
I know it. All right. In trans news, something that we all need to keep an eye out for. The Advocate reports that the Department of Health and Human Services is close to finalizing a rule that would get rid of so many of the protections against anti-trans and sex discrimination in the Affordable Care Act. The rule governs the enforcement of the healthcare rights law, which prohibits sex discrimination in healthcare, and a regulation issued under the Obama administration in 2016 clarified that sex discrimination does include anti-trans discrimination. It also said the definition includes discrimination against women who have had abortion. So that was new, a clarification under Obama. Well, the new rule being prepared by the Trump administration would define sex discrimination more narrowly, excluding anti-trans discrimination. They released this proposed rule last May for public comment, but they are expected to release the final rule soon. So it is something we all need to watch out to support our trans family members and members of our community, because Here we are in the midst of a giant pandemic. The healthcare system is struggling. People are having access to healthcare, and they want to make it even more difficult for a part of our community that already has a hard time navigating the healthcare system anyway because of their unique and specific healthcare needs.
All right.
Well, we need to skip this next one. Let's do and we'll add it at the end if we have time because we're behind.
Okay.
Shall we do our discussion?
Yes.
Well, you know, the freedom here is you don't have to worry about any of it, and I'll take care of the timeline.
I love it. I love it. And yeah, you know, I just love having someone else in control. I just love it.
Just show up, read, say witty and charming thoughts, and we all have a good time.
I get the outline. I read it over once, obviously not twice. And then we hit the air.
All right, y'all. So let's try our new thing. Dell and I are going to share our thoughts about Circus of Books, but go ahead and start writing your comments and what you thought about it, what was interesting to you, if you have any questions about what we thought, and I'll put them on screen and we'll read them and we'll discuss this very interesting documentary. What did you think, Dell Shores?
I absolutely loved it. I liked so much about it. I loved, I wish I had all the names. I should have written them down. But the filmmaker whose parents, you know, kept this what they did from them for and were immersed in a religion, the Jewish religion, as they basically were seduced more and more out of necessity and out of livelihood into the gay porn world. And there's such a twist that I didn't really see coming. I mean, I didn't see the gay son coming, and it really
not from the first time he spoke.
I did not. I mean, I thought he was. I was going, well, there's the hot brother. I did that, but I thought her journey, her struggle with it all, was so complicated and rather beautiful by the end. And you know, it was interesting how she was so accepting of the gay community, but she really wasn't, you know.
For those of you who didn't see it and didn't join our watch party, Circus of Books is a new documentary that premiered on Netflix this weekend. It premiered at Tribeca last year. And it is the story of a Jewish couple. She started as a journalist. He was an inventor who invented a doohickey for dialysis machines that when they were short on money, they saw an ad from Larry Flint in their newspaper looking for personal individual distributors of essentially hardcore pornography, because it was during an era where there were many places where it was illegal to sell or buy. And so they started doing it part-time, drove around in their car, delivering it to gas stations and liquor stores.
Hustle.
And then there was a bookstore in Silver Lake called Book Circus that was behind on his rent because the old owner was high on coke all the time. So they offered the owner of the building 50% of the rent, took it over, and opened a bookstore called Circus of Books as a temporary stopgap in their lives. And then they ran this bookstore selling hardcore pornography for more than 30 years. At one point, and then they became producers of hardcore gay porn, releasing two films a week, the highest distributor of gay pornography in the country at one point, while raising three children at home who had no idea what their parents' bookstore was.
Right. And she continued to be religious during this whole time, going to temple. It was also, they had two of them, right? I mean, ultimately they had
yes,
the West Hollywood, which actually became even bigger. But I loved the way that the name came about. It was called Book Circus, right? Originally.
Yes.
And it became Circus of Books simply because he split the sign in two and just so that to save money and could just add the of.
Yes.
But
Stewart said he had a friend that lived above the one in WeHo in the apartments. I mean, it was three blocks from my apartment now. It closed last year. Finally, they shuttered their doors. And through the documentary, you see them go from being huge and then seeing online porn
streaming
take over their business. But also very interesting because as this straight Jewish couple, they had a very close-up view without being involved in it of what happened when the AIDS crisis happened. They talked about having an employee who went home on a Friday night and was dead by Monday morning, worked up until the very end of his life. And then it took a turn, like you were talking about, when their son, who was a student at Columbia, came home and finally was able to come out to them as gay. And she had a very hard time with it. She talks very openly in the documentary about realizing that she was fine with it at work, and that was a very separate part of their business, but she struggled with it personally with him, reconciling it with her very Orthodox Jewish faith.
Because like our faith, or like our former faith, that we were raised with, the word abomination came up for her. It was in the Old Testament, the abomination. And I loved how motherly she was, and what an amazing humanitarian she was during the AIDS crisis, where they would go to hospitals and they would be with these the people that they knew, sometimes employees, sometimes just friends. And she was so angry at the mothers for not, because a lot of them abandoned their children. And then all of a sudden, the son was scared of coming out to his parents because he didn't know if he would be welcome in their home anymore. And she did struggle. So, I mean, the father was like, I love that. He was just like, you're my son, you know, because he came out on a post-it note. He wrote, I'm gay, and threw it in the middle of a table.
And his dad was like, not sure who wrote it. He wrote it, which was hilarious.
Yeah. So it was really, I thought, so human. And I loved the sister. And she was like, you know, because I think a lot of relatives of gay men, it's like, why didn't you tell me? I would have been okay. Why did you go through this alone? And, you know, here she is behind the camera and she couldn't speak, you know?
Yeah. Well, I felt there was such an interesting dynamic even among the kids that she was like, me and my queer friends. And he basically said, y'all were too gay for me. Like, that was too much.
Yeah.
Like, y'all were too much. He clearly didn't really want to be on camera, but wanted to support her and support, like, telling the story. Like, he was like, how do I do my part as quickly as possible? Which was adorable and charming in its own right. But I thought it spoke, also sidebar, for those of you who watch Drag Race, Alaska, who won All Stars on Drag Race, worked there for a while. So she's in the documentary talking about working there. And let's see what Rosemary had to say. She said, the dad didn't have a problem with the son coming out, but it was hard for the mother to accept him, but her transformation was beautiful. She was so open about wishing she had not said some of the words that she said to her son when he came out, but acknowledged you can't take back those words.
Yeah.
Normal religious journey.
That was so well put, Rosemary. I love that at the end, they were marching in the West Hollywood parade, Pride parade with P flag and being proud parents of their gay son. So it showed, you know, here's what I really loved about it, Emerson, because we addressed this theme in A Very Sordid Wedding, that we have to acknowledge that people can evolve. And I really get tired, and I'll get on a mini soapbox here, but I get so tired when our own community lashes out at people who have evolved, question that involvement. Well, why weren't you there for us? Blah, blah, blah. You know, somebody on Twitter the other day was going after Joe Biden because at one time he voted for Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you know, Hillary, Obama, but they all got there. And we have to be okay and say thank you for getting there. It took us a while to get there, you know? We got to give people time. And I love the evolution that she had. And she was a tough one. Man, she was tough. And they all said she wore the pants in the family.
Well, Scott Fullerton said he's having her, I think he means the film director, on his radio show tomorrow. So y'all tune in for that. But I wanted to say one more thing about, you know, about Circus of Books and those bookstores. You know, I remember walking past the human sexuality section at Barnes & Noble as a teenager and not wanting to stop, but like trying to scan all the rows to see if there was one or two or three, you know, gay books. And then getting a little older and going to the coffee shop bookstore in the gayborhood in Cedar Springs. And, you know, for so long, for so many of us who weren't ready to go to bars or weren't old enough to go to bars, you know, those queer bookstores were, for many of us, a first place to know that the people in the room with us were probably like us. You know, it was a little bit terrifying to go in. Like, I remember standing outside the bookstore and being like, they're going to know. The minute I walk through the store, everyone's going to know. And then going, yes, but also that means everyone in there is also the same. And looking at the people in the bookstore as much as I was looking at the books, you know, that's somebody like me. That's that, you know, look, I can look at the book they're holding. And even if I don't speak to them, there's a safeness in this one very specific small space. And the blessing and the curse of our, the development of our community, the development of our culture, is that we no longer need, quote, as much those exclusive specific spaces, but those bookstores and coffee shops and even porn stores served as such a bridge for so many of us on our journey to being publicly queer. And so it's lovely and sad to see that sort of falling away. And this documentary was such an incredible demonstration of that.
Yeah, that was after the Sears and JCPenney underwear section of the catalogs, you know? That was for me.
For me, it was the underwear boxes at a Mervyn's at like 11. Oh, I still remember they sold a thong and I was just fascinated by this like man on the box, obviously wearing it. I just stared.
That reminds me, I wasn't planning to say this, but you said thong. There is a YouTube video that will make you pee your pants from Sister Myotis, my good friend Steve Swift, who plays her, and he talks about thongs not being good Christian panties and being a fecal nightmare, and he can't imagine. It's just, it is the most, he plays this old church lady who's very upset about thongs. So y'all go after the show, not right now. Now stay with us.
That makes sense until you think about the fact that a number of us on a regular basis eat them.
Oh.
Not thongs, but.
Emerson.
All right. That seems like a lovely transition to our nonsense stories.
Yes.
So Del and I are going to give you a performance for this story. So a young man named Christopher Michael lives in Orlando, and he shared on Twitter the other day that he has an OnlyFans account. And one of his mom's coworkers tried to expose his secret to her mother, and he shared the following text exchange. Now, Del and I are gonna flex our acting muscles. Obviously, Del will be playing the mother.
I was hoping. Emerson, when you sent this story, I thought, oh my God, I used to love when we did this on the L show, where we actually had a little acting. I will do my best. It's just a cold reading, y'all. Please, please, it's just a cold reading. So I did not.
Del will play the Florida mother, and I will play the twink. It's a stretch for both of us now.
All right. Christopher Michael, why did Miss Jamie tell me she saw your nudes on her son's Twitter? Are you seriously posting your nudes for money?
I may or may not have an OnlyFans, so I may or may not post pictures to promote it. All hypothetical talk, by the way.
Hypothetical? Are you kidding me? She showed me the tweets. As your mother, this is very worrying for me.
Kind of an awkward conversation to have over text, don't you think?
You can go ahead and call me if you like and try to explain it, but honestly, I don't care. I was just pretending to care because Mrs. Jamie was in my office still. Chase the bag, boo. Also, I will be updating my Mother's Day list and birthday list and Christmas list from now on.
And scene. Now he added, for everyone saying that this isn't my mom, here's the photo to shut you up because it's ha-ha. She's 38 and she looks good for her age, so kindly back off. Because a lot of people did accuse him of like, nobody's mom says chase the bag, boo. But whether it's true or not, I found it highly entertaining.
Did you think I pulled off the 38-year-old feel of that? Because I was trying to be a little younger, a little hipper.
I felt the mother, maybe not the 38.
Fuck you.
That's all right. I can't do a twink anymore either. So we're both stretching our talent.
It was a buy for both of us.
I'm fully twunk. It's fine.
I think audio would have been better.
Yes. Yeah, we should have said close your eyes and listen. All right, one more junk story, and we'll get to these wonderful men to tell us about the incredible thing they're doing.
Oh, my God. I got so obsessed with this story, I went on their site and looked at all these dolls. There's a sex doll sales spike. sex toy manufacturer, Sex Doll Genie. It's just sexdollgenie.com, y'all. Don't go now, after the show, has reported a major spike in sales during this pandemic. The company has already sold more dolls in the first quarter of the year than in the whole of 2019. And by the way, these dolls are like $2,000+. They are not cheap. So they have really kept their workplace in demand. With all the demand they get, they've kept their employees. And it seems like the male sex dolls are really selling like hotcakes to queer men and women, not queer women, but. So they said, we are seeing the sex doll industry go through a revolution during COVID-19 pandemic with a huge increase in orders from both couples and males and single females. So I guess couples are like having a third, which is like a sex doll third.
I mean, at a certain point, you know, 5 weeks, have I just been looking at you, or years and years and years, you want to invite a guest star to the moment and you can't bring over a friend?
Quite okay with humor, or maybe you do humor when there's not a pandemic. I don't know. I have a lot of questions for these people who are ordering these. But anyway, they're $2,000. And you know, I started looking. Most of the male are very twinky. They need like a big, burly, hairy. I didn't get those though.
Oh yeah, they definitely need size and shape variety. I mean, come on now.
They need more variety. Felt like they need variety. But I was thinking, you know, I'm glad that I didn't see this before I bought my spinning bike. That's because a spinning bike, sex doll, it would have been such because, y'all, I like Pornhub, but I'm running out of things to watch.
I mean, on Amazon, I feel like they end up in the same category because you can ride them both.
Oh, that was good, Emerson.
Every once in a while. Yes. And finally, one quick, this is a really exciting story. On a really long journey, Neil Broverman over at HIV Plus Mag tells the story of former police officer William Liam Pierce. He's won a case against the Iberia Parish Sheriff's Office in Louisiana after an excruciating 8-year battle. He was hired as a sheriff's deputy, but the offer was rescinded after a medical evaluation revealed his HIV positive status. So they rescinded the offer immediately. And after an 8-year struggle with Lambda Legal fighting on his behalf, they will pay him $90,000. They will change their policies towards HIV-positive employees and prospective employees. And all employees will undergo training in HIV, including actual transmission risks, stigma, and the effects of HIV discrimination, and an explicit ban in their discrimination policy. So a huge applause to Liam and Lambda Legal for fighting that.
Yeah,
because an eight-year battle is really long, and HIV discrimination in culture, but certainly in the workplace, based in fear and lack of understanding. But you think about that. He spent the last 8 years fighting this case to make sure nobody else faced the discrimination that he did. And that is a lot of time, emotional energy invested to ensure that that example is set. So $90,000,
frankly, is not enough in my opinion, but I'm glad he got it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, everybody's been waiting. They've both been patiently waiting through the nonsense of our last several stories. It's very personally exciting on a personal level. Shall we welcome to our show?
Yes.
Our very special guests, Scott Lowell and Peter Page.
What?
Hi, everybody.
Hello, gentlemen.
How are you?
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Emerson. Hi, Petey. Hi, Del.
Hi. How are y'all?
I have a few notes on your performance of a 38-year-old mother. And it's not a big thing. She was more like a 68-year-old, you know, like church granny is sort of what I was getting.
Oh, okay.
Until she said you grab that bag or whatever it was.
That is my Trump moment there, just scratching my nose. How are you, man? It's so good to see you. Y'all are aging so well.
Oh, bless you. See, I'm gonna say I got the 38-year-old part. I just didn't buy mother. I saw like big old ho lady. I didn't get the mother part.
I know. I play a slut much, much better. And I know that you can relate to that.
And now that in your lives you both moved on to being writers and directors and creators and things, it's so much more intimidating to give a performance and get all these notes.
I know. I was very cool. I was in my head. I was in my head the whole time.
Also, this is completely unrelated, but what was the address of that sex doll place?
Oh, perfect. Sexdoll.com.
I'm so lonely.
Sex doll. Peter, I've been thinking, what friends would be open enough just to, you know, do some FaceTime J-O, something different than going right to, but it's so awkward if they say no. You know?
I'm fine about, I just want someone to cuddle.
Oh, I know.
I just want a hug. I want someone to spoon me for a little bit. Just,
Hey, Scott.
I'm dirty.
There you go.
I was listening to that great story about the text exchange herself. She really enjoyed it.
Tough audience.
I have three, and every morning when I wake up, I give them all hugs. I love you. I love you. And they're going, what the fuck is wrong?
Exactly. It's like, don't you go to work?
A little weird. You're being a little weird lately. So I just wanted y'all to see how I created a set behind me to honor the show. And if I put my head right here, it's right between Scott and Peter.
Look. You're
apart. It's like you're laying in the photo almost.
Exactly.
Everyone watching, if you have questions for Peter or Scott, go ahead and list them in the comments and I'll ask them in a little while. But before we derail on lots of things, Scott, tell everybody about the wonderful thing you all are doing this weekend.
Oh, thank you. It's we're very, very excited. So this Friday is May 1st, May Day, and we are hosting a live stream event, much like what you're watching now. We'll just be on YouTube Live. We're not as fancy with the Facebook and the YouTube. We'll be on YouTube Live, and it's going to be a 20th anniversary Queer as Folk. We started back in 2000 shooting Queer as Folk. And it's going to be our 20th anniversary. And we're going to do kind of a cast and crew reunion live stream to benefit Centerlink, which I'm sure a lot of you know. But if you don't, it's kind of the hub of all the LGBTQ plus centers throughout the U.S., Canada, other countries as well, too. And we want to help them raise a shit-ton of money so they can help support all the centers that they work with and keep them running and operating during these challenging times, because we were texting with each other and talking. You know, this time of year, I think a lot of these centers host their big spring galas and fundraisers, and obviously they're not going to be able to do that. And I think a lot of them are going to end up having budget shortcomings that we would like to help them overcome as much as we can. So we want to share. We're a very sentimental crew. Del knows this. I mean, we all love each other. The show was really one of those rare experiences where here we are 20 years later and we still adore seeing each other. We get together as often as we can. And so it's going to be a bit of a sentimental journey, I think. I'm going to be sharing photographs, and we're going to be bringing together cast members, you know, main cast members, and reuniting them with a lot of the favorite guest stars that they worked with, people they had romantic subplots with. Rosie O'Donnell is going to be coming on the show to reunite with Sharon and a lot of other amazing people. And so I think it'll be fun for fans of the show to hear. And then we did things like we're talking to our directors, and we had an amazing interview that I did the other day with Del and the other writers on the show and Ron and Dan, the creators of the show. So people are really going to get to know all those people who see their names go streaming by on the credits at the end of the show, and they don't know really who they are. And I want them to get to know these people. For all these people who, for, you know, at least 15 years since we've gone off the air, binge watch the show over and over and over again, I want them to feel as sentimental about it as we do and how much we all love each other.
And yes, it's your brainchild, right, Scott? I mean, this is so good. You came up with the idea to do this to reunite for this?
Well, we were kind of texting with each other and looking for something to do. It's kind of something we all came up with together, but
He came up with it. He approached us and said, I have an idea. Why don't we do this way? And we all said, that is an awesome idea, Scott. He is also busting his ass right now, putting this all together. Oh, wow. He is working so hard, you guys. This is all the genius of my beloved Scooby. And I'm so, so proud and grateful that he's made it so easy.
It's a wonderful thing. We're all so grateful for you know, the time that you've spent and for bringing everybody back together. That was so emotional for me the other day.
Oh, good.
To, It was like, you know, just to be and to remember how we all really adored each other. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us in that room. There were a couple of other writers along the way when I was on the show, but those were the ones that Ron and Dan chose to bring back. And we were the ones that we just truly adored each other. I want to say one thing before we go forward. Everybody always asks me about the cast. What was the cast like? But I want to say that these two guys, of all the people in the cast, there was one other one. But these two guys stopped by the writer's room every single season multiple times just to say thank you and hello. And, oh, and I have an idea. So we loved that about the two of you.
Thank you very much. Emerson,
and also, Peter, not to put you on the spot, but you're still on the board at the LA LGBT Center, right?
I am actually not. I stepped down in December, but I have been on the board for over 12 years. So
I was going to say, can speak to a little bit that the importance of why the centers are struggling and why CenterLink and the work they do are so important.
Well, I mean, look, CenterLink, you know, they help everyone from the little like two person LGBT centers, you know, in tiny, you know, in rural parts of the country and in foreign countries and things like that, all the way up to the LA LGBT Center, which is the largest LGBT organization in the world. But they all, you know, they all need support. I mean, it is, and these are challenging times, and the federal government is a hot mess, as we all know. So I think there's a lot of danger that some of these really pivotal community service organizations could go away, and you know, the most marginalized among us will suffer badly because of it. So any money that we can raise to support those people is absolutely key. If all it takes is us coming back together to love on each other a bit and tell some good off-color stories, then that's what we're gonna do. I've got dirty stories about Scott Lowell.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I mean, I will now, getting the important piece out there. Now I can abuse the opportunity to fangirl because I am of the exact age of the oldest millennials that my coming out journey happened as you all appeared on our televisions for the first time. I had a friend who taped it on his VHS and we like secretly watched it at his house at like 1 o'clock in the morning. But speaking to you two directly, like certainly the sexuality has been talked about and the importance of seeing that and seeing sexual gay men. But the friendship between your two characters was really impactful for a lot of us too, in seeing gay friendship, not just gay relationships and the pursuit of, you know, romance and love and dealing with all of that. But, you know, it was one of our earliest experiences of before the relationship journey detour, but seeing a really great, healthy gay friendship that so many of us did not yet have the opportunity to have. That was really important early in that I don't think it's talked about as much as the sexual part.
Well, thank you. That's just
a thank you statement,
I love that the friendship survived. You know, like many times friends in the gay community, they try to get together, it doesn't work out, and sometimes that destroys a friendship, but I love that the way that Ted and Emmett got back together as friends.
We got through it.
Yeah.
Here's a little bit of backstory. Ted and Emmett were not meant to be friends. That was not how the show was conceived. We were both meant to be Michael's two friends. But the truth is, Scott and I met on our very first screen test for the series and fell in love. And we became Ted and Emmett. We became super, super good friends. And Dan and Ron, to their credit, they spotted it and they decided to write to it. And it was a real gift for us too. We just had an incredible 5 years together.
Well, I want to address something that, you know, Ron and Dan spoke about many times, and you know, now there's so many LGBT characters on television, but at that time there weren't, and they spoke that there were many people, actors, who turned down even the opportunity to audition for this show. And so there was a huge bravery that you took these roles, not only took them, embraced their sexuality, were willing to do what was asked. And I mean, there was a collaboration. I always loved that anytime there was a sex scene, the director had a meeting with everybody, made sure everybody was okay. But I just wanted, one by one, did you ever have any hesitancy? Did any agent, did any manager say, hey, Scott, this is not a good idea?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't know. Peter can speak to this too. Like, I mean, at the time, I didn't at all think like, oh, be brave or anything like that. I just loved this script so much. I related to the character, sadly, so much, or understood him at least, that it just seemed like an opportunity I had to do. My sister was gay also. I did know it would be important for her to see a show like this, and I wanted to do it for her, but I didn't go into it thinking like, oh, I'm so brave. My agents told me not to take it because the money was so terrible. But I had a couple actor friends of mine say to me, and again, this was in 2000, say to me, and we signed 6-year contracts at first, even though we only ended up doing 5 of the show. But they would say to me, I don't know, 6 years playing gay, that's a long time to commit to that. I don't know if you should do that. Just because of that stigma that I think was still there to play gay characters in entertainment, on in television and in films. And they thought to be playing a character like that for 6 years, that was it. I mean, my agents, I mean, they were fine with me doing the show. Honestly, it was just they thought the money was so sucky because it was for Showtime way back then before they paid their actors anything until we dragged them kicking and screaming into the 21st century.
Yeah, good for you that you did that too. A lot of people don't know that, but they formed a mini union around season 3 because I was on the show at that time. And I remember we shut down for like a week just to make, as the negotiations were finishing, and there were less episodes, but there was more money for you guys and well-deserved money. So how great that you did that. I loved it.
My story around that is my manager, my openly gay, super gay, positive, super gay friendly manager, who had never said anything like this to me in my career, said, I don't think you should do this show. And I said, why? He said, I just got a 20-page nudity writer to attach to your final contract. And he said, we both know your career is about to happen. It's so obvious, he said, and I'm just afraid if you do this show and then I try to send you to ABC to screen test for some sitcom, that they're gonna say, I can't put this guy on ABC. I just saw him getting ass fucked over on Showtime. So
you go into ABC Family and creating like one of their biggest shows.
So I said, let me think about it. And I went and had my best friend, Krista Vernoff, who now runs Grey's Anatomy and Station 19. I called her and told her what he'd said. And she said, let me pull some tarot cards. So she pulled some tarot cards. And she pulled the first card and she went, oh, yeah. And I said, what? And she said, you have to do the show. It's going to change your life and it's going to change the world. And I was like, oh, okay. And she was like, yeah, no. And she'd been sort of on the fence too. When she heard his argument, she was like, that's an interesting point of view. Anyway, that's how it came to be.
Well, and it is interesting to have watched the two of you since then, because you take a job, you're actors, and it's certainly this pivotal cultural flashpoint. But I want to speak to the inspiration of the two different journeys you've gone on. Scott, you are the most incredible example of what an ally can be, who continues to show up, who doesn't just take the job and the applause and then go on with your life. You continue to show up in the community and for the community. And that's so far above and beyond just being the artist, the artist activist line. So many people are just artists, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with doing good work and doing good work, but to take that mantle and wear it proudly speaks hugely to you. And then Peter, I mean, there's not enough to say about how you've even taken the sort of unfair criticisms people have lobbed backwards at the show and done in and taken and created work speaking to so many other aspects of the queer community in the work that you've created, to speaking to trans people and to lesbians, bisexual characters so seamlessly in The Fosters and Good Trouble, that you have both taken that opportunity you were given and then spun it back into our community is so above and beyond the call of an actor. And not many people do.
Thank you very much, Emerson.
Thank you. I mean, I mentioned this, to the writers the other day. It didn't make it in the final cut that people will see, but I made it. I the writers of our show, the actors on our show, especially Peter and Robert and Randy, the out actors on the show. It was hard for me. It's hard not to be politicized by doing a show like that. And it's hard not to be inspired by the bravery of those people you're working with and you hold dear. And it's, I don't know how you do a show like that and not use that platform to do whatever you can. I don't know how, what else to do. I mean, if I was doing, I don't know what other show I could think of that I would be doing, but I might not have been as politically motivated as this show, but I just don't know how you do a show like Queer as Folk and you don't get out there and just start fighting for everything.
And you don't, well, go ahead, Dale, you go.
Like there are those who don't, and that, you know, and you just, thank you. We just thank you. Will you put Emerson? Will you put Garrett Mann Reed's comment about getting sober because of Ted's storyline up?
Well, can you do it because I'm not at that one.
I don't know how. I'll just read.
Come to that one in a minute. Let me do them in the order.
I'll just read it.
I'll put it up. I'm just further back in the comments right now.
Oh, okay. It just popped up. It's just like the one thing that, I mean, I'll speak to it. I love in my own work and in Queer as Folk, the work I did on Queer as Folk and y'all did on Queer as Folk, I think some of the most meaningful things for me is when people, you know, what Emerson said, you know, it had a huge part of coming out for a lot of people. And anyway, we just covered up the boys, but here he said, I just wanted to send a comment to Scott and Peter. When I was trying to get clean from my own struggles with substance abuse, I was wanting to take a second to thank you for playing someone struggling with that and for being the friend who towed the hard line. Seeing Ted get clean was a big part of why I felt like I could get clean and have a functional life after. By the way, I've been clean for 16 years now. Thanks for being there for us. We love you.
Thank you, Garrett.
Yeah, so I just saw that and I thought you have to hear that, you know.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think Peter and I worked really, really hard on that storyline. And, you know, again, taking what you all in the writer's room gave us to work with and giving us the courage to kind of do it right. You know, I think we all just wanted to get that storyline right, especially back then when it was just kind of beginning, when crystal meth was really just starting to become the problem it was in the community. We felt a great responsibility to get that right. All of us, I think, Dale, right?
I mean, we did, you heard Ben and Rob the other day. I think we worked harder in the psychology of the two characters for that storyline than we did for anything else. We really wanted to get that one right. I mean, I remember we put Leslie Jordan on our speakerphone and he was telling us his experiences before he got sober and everything and his experience with meth and all the stuff about I felt pretty. All that stuff came out of Leslie Jordan's research to us. We did our work too.
I rather disappointingly lived through that storyline in my personal life a few years later. I had a boyfriend who went really deep down the meth hole, and I will tell you, we got it fucking astoundingly right.
Yeah,
it was literally like, I cannot believe I'm living these episodes again. Like it's the same fights, the same words, the same fears, the same heartbreak, all spot on.
The number of art imitating life moments that I think Peter and I shared with each other during this entire process was really pretty amazing. And I remember when Peter was going through that and it's just, yeah, you can't believe it.
No.
We had Liberty asked, were you surprised that not just gay men were watching the show, but also a lot of straight women? Now, how did you deal with that? Was that a fun aspect of the success?
I think maybe at first we were a little surprised. Scotty, you did chime in. But right away we realized like, oh, this makes perfect sense. These are relationship stories, and the relationship dramas, you know, famously the purview of the female viewer. And these are hot guys, you know, having sex and getting naked and falling in love. Right. And like, I was like, I don't see any reason to be mad at that. The same reason we all knew straight men were watching, you know, lesbian sex for years. Like, I think it all makes sense. We just none of us had thought it all the way through yet. And yeah, we were incredibly grateful for our female fans.
Absolutely.
They kept the show alive.
I wanted to tell you guys, one time I got a fan letter during my time on Queer as Folk, and this guy wrote me, I don't know how he got my personal email, and he said, Del, I just want to thank you for, and to please tell the writers, thank you for Queer as Folk. I am a straight man and it's my favorite show. I've never seen it, but I actually get laid every Sunday night.
Yeah. I had a cop stop me in Times Square and say the same thing. He said, hey, And I was like, oh my God, I'm in trouble. Cops coming at me times ago. He goes, you on that queer show? I am. I was like, where's this going? He goes, thanks a lot, man. My girlfriend. Every Sunday night, like clockwork. Every Sunday night.
That's exquisite bonus.
We're just helping. We're just helping everybody. It's just like.
I never got that benefit.
And since everyone can tune into the big reunion this weekend, we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss the brilliant, wonderful things you all have been doing, you know, since then. And Liberty says, and this is great, because love the thing about Harry and Adoptable. And Scott, tell people about Adoptable.
So Adoptable is a short form series that I wrote and produced a couple of years ago that you can
start in and create it as well.
Also Dame Sharon Gless, Gail Harold makes a cameo. Try to get Peter in. He was a little busy, but it's a very, very loosely based, highly fictionalized version of the search I went through for my birth parents. Very shot like a fake documentary, very uncomfortable, awkward humor. And I'm immensely proud of it. You can find it on starbabynetwork.com right now. And if you can't find that, you can also in the States find it on Amazon Prime. But yeah, 6 episodes, 15 minutes. You can binge through the whole thing, hour and a half. I'm immensely proud of it. We're hoping to get a second season.
It's a great, Scott did such an incredible job. It is, if you're a fan of like The Office or Modern Family or shows like that, it lives in that space and it's so, so well done. It'll make your chest hurt and make your belly hurt from laughing.
Thanks.
And then Peter, Good Trouble's been picked up for season 3, yes?
Yes, we were shooting.
Where were you in the process with
I was directing the premiere of season 3 when we got shut down for the COVID.
So we're watching and waiting.
So we're waiting.
Now, yes. but the thing about Harry, everyone can obviously still go find.
They can. It's a little bit tricky to find right now, although they did just air it last night, the night before. Last night on Freeform. The best place to find it now is on iTunes. If you have access to US iTunes, it's on iTunes. It's $3.99, so it's not too bad. The thing about Harry was my gay rom-com. I love rom-coms, I always have, and I'd always wanted to do a good old-fashioned queer one, and I'm so, 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 so proud of it.
And it was thrilling to watch, because it was like, there's like the struggles that are important, that we can certainly keep telling all the versions of, but the struggle had nothing to do with their, like, it's just, no, these are just two guys trying to find each other. It was delightful and charming and smart and so reflective, I think, for a new young generation of their experience. Like, we're just struggling to find each other, not with all as much of that crap y'all had to deal with.
Thank you. That was the intent. That was the intent from the beginning.
And it's been so great to see. I mean, I got to see it here earlier before the world turned upside down. And it was so, I mean, I wept at least 3 or 4 times towards the end of it. But it's so exciting to see something like that. And then to hear these comments of kids going like, wow, I never thought I'd see something like this for me up on the screen. And to know that Peter and, you know, so many who like would have loved to have had that when they were kids, to see a rom-com just like this that spoke to them without any extra sauce on it or anything. You know, it's not like an issue film. It's just they happen to be gay. And it's this amazing, funny, heartwarming story. It's really great.
And one, thrilling to see you back on screen again. But also showing a relationship we don't get to see as often either. An older gay with a younger gay, and that relationship that a lot of us didn't have because the generation before us was decimated and mourning, to see that so lovingly expressed was also a new kind of relationship in our films and TV.
And it's not sexualized in any way. There's no kind of daddy story going on there. It's just like they're roommates and they're friends, and he's there to give some, you know, counsel. I can't believe I've become the elder gay, but it happens to the best.
People too, after I watched it, I said, you know, for all the fans out there who've been wanting for years some kind of queer folk reboot kind of thing, I felt like, especially those scenes that Jake and Peter have, like, that's your template for what a reboot, I think, of Queer as Folk would be, to have, like, these characters where they are now and a younger generation coming up. How do they blend? How do they mix together? And it worked so beautifully. I love those scenes as well too.
And really quick, since you spoke of the reboot and people are asking the question, and there was news that there was going to be a Queer as Folk reboot, but that was nothing to do with the American version, correct? It was all Russell Davies and the British version, and we have not heard anything
about it since.
I think the last I heard is it maybe going to Peacock, the NBC streamer.
Okay. We'll see.
But it's unfortunately none of us are involved. So we'll yeah.
Well,
on that note, goodbye.
Well, it is such a pleasure to see y'all. I love you guys.
We love you too, Dale.
We love you. Thank you guys so much for having us on. Scotty, tell everybody again where they can find the event.
It's going to be on YouTube Live. If you go to, we have a Facebook page for, it's May Day, because it takes place on May Day, Homestay, because you should stay home, Gay Play, because that's what we do. May Day, Homestay, Gay Play. You can find it there. If you follow me or Peter on Twitter or Instagram or another place, we'll be posting all the links of where you can find it on YouTube. But you can find it on YouTube also under May Day, Homestay, Gay Play.
Do you have a time? What time it's starting?
11 a.m. Yes, thank you. We are starting 11 a.m. This is on Friday. 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. We have fans, as you know, in Europe, all over Asia, Russia. So we are trying to hit as many time zones as we can all over the world with this, because we know it means so much to so many people.
All
and
right.
We're going to raise all this money for Centrelink.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Well, thanks for doing it, and thanks for doing our little show. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, gentlemen.
We appreciate
you. Thanks for your work and your activism.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for the kind
word. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Oh, it was so good to see. What
I know. I try not to be too big a nerd about it, but it really is. You know, we don't, you know, there are so many artists who don't take the impact of their work. You know, they just, these are the stories they want to tell. And they've done such incredible work making their stories matter and telling good stories that also are impactful. You know, they don't sacrifice the quality of the entertainment for the activism, but tell such important messages about and for and through our community. So I try not to be too big a fangirl, but they really are lions of the front line of our community and representation that makes it possible for me to be an out openly gay actor and that not be a big deal.
Well, it was truly, I mean, I did a lot of work in my career because as Peter pointed out, I'm really old. You know, I can play a almost 70-year-old woman that, it was for me the best TV experience I had for 3 years. I would have done it four more at least. it was such a rich time for me. I loved it.
All right. Well, y'all, before we go, we didn't do it during the show like we usually do. We hope that you enjoyed spending an entertaining hour with us. If you are at home and struggling, we hope this gives you an opportunity to have some diversion. If you are someone that is financially blessed and you want to throw us a dollar or five or 10 or 1,000, you can send us a tip on Venmo at Emerson Collins. It's in the banner below. Or you can PayPal us at beardcollinshoresproductions@gmail.com. If you can't, we totally understand. When the broadcast is done, please share it across with your friends and family and fans. That's all I got today.
Yeah, and go all these people who are online, you know, singing for their supper and entertaining, catch as many shows as you can. We got Debbie Holiday and Levi Christ always on Sundays, and our friend Matt Yee, and just Uncabaret is still going on. And so we want to support them and just continue to get through this together, y'all. We got to do it. And do not forget to tune in for the Queerest Folk reunion, because that's going to be a lot of fun. Absolutely. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.